This is a podcast from WOR.
Now, it's A Better Road Home. He worked for you in Albany. He's New York's voice. He's your voice.
His career belies everything he said. He has manipulated the media time and time again.
Welcome to the Governor David Patterson Show.
What's more annoying than whether anybody buys it is the fact that he thinks he can sell it.
New York's only local news talk in the afternoon.
We're all titillated by gossip. We all have a pitch here when we hear a good story about somebody, but we don't vote that way.
Now, the man with the inside track on the tri-state, here is Governor David Patterson.
Well, we here at WOR like to engage in mirth and have fun with one of our colleagues who hosts the show Coast to Coast from 1 to 5 in the mornings here on WOR. And I have certainly not eschewed the opportunity to crack jokes about Coast to Coast, but being a night owl, they often have some very interesting topics on that show with George Norrie. This particular show that I heard a few weeks ago, the host was George Knapp, and they talked about one of the most infamous serial killers, the Zodiac Killer, who first killed somebody in December of 1968 and later identified himself as the Zodiac Killer. And the Zodiac Killer, for those who do not know, was a serial killer active in California in the late 60s and early 70s. He named himself the Zodiac Killer and claimed 37 victims, though the police, after exhaustive research, have only given him credit for seven victims, although it's not known if he killed people in up until 1968, when he finally started killing as the Zodiac Killer. He generally attacked young couples in secluded areas, kind of lover's lanes, but he doesn't fit the profile of the angry sexual killer like Son of Sam or others who had deep-seated issues and would want to attack others who were obviously romantically involved. And it makes him perhaps the most fascinating of all the serial killers. In the seven murders that he committed, he used guns and in a couple of cases a knife. He did not kill all of his victims, which I don't think is widely known, and once used an odd costume in these types of cases. He twice telephoned the police from payphones to let them know that he was the killer. He once said he would call a television show, and somebody did call a television show identifying himself as the Zodiac Killer, but that was later disproven. He wrote letters from July 31st, 1969 through July 8th of 1974, and wrote at least 18 letters. There are some communications from 1966 to 1968 that could be the Zodiac Killer, but nobody really knows this. When the Zodiac movie came out on March the 8th of 2007, the San Francisco Chronicle did a story about the many, many people who still follow the investigation of the Zodiac Killer, and how many of them there actually are. This case has fascinated people, amateur detectives, if you will, bloggers now, who have gone through exhaustive research to try to figure out who was the Zodiac Killer. Our guest this afternoon is Tom Voigt, who was just a toddler when the Zodiac last struck and killed a cab driver, but over the years has grown up probably to have the most comprehensive website on any issue, save the Zodiac Killer, and he joins us now. Tom, good afternoon.
Hi, Governor. Thanks for having me on. That was a great summary, by the way.
Well, thank you very much. And I must tell you, I was a teenager and heard about the Zodiac killings. I didn't really understand them as well as I would years later. And it's a pleasure to talk to you. And what do you think, and I think I know what your answer is, fascinates so many people about this unsolved mystery from 44 years ago?
It's like something from a comic book. It's like a villain from Batman, who just appeared out of nowhere with a costume and a fancy name, and who challenged the police to come and catch him and stop him from killing and committing all sorts of mayhem. And unlike in Batman, in the real life, the real villain, the Zodiac, got away with it, and nobody was able to catch him and put him in jail. And he challenged the police. He challenged the public. He sent evidence to newspapers so the police would have evidence of his crimes, so that they could make it more of a challenging game.
And that's what, in some ways, sets him apart from some of the other serial killers, although serial killers that we're more familiar with in this era have, in a sense, mimicked some of the Zodiac killers, his patterns of conduct and behavior. What sets him apart from, the other serial killers who at times have killed far more people than he did?
Well, Zodiac's motive is unknown. I guess it will be unknown until he's caught and can explain why he did what he did. But what set the Zodiac apart to this day from all of the famous serial killers is that Zodiac apparently just wanted this game of chess to be played with the public. He wanted to show how smart he was, and he was smart. He wanted to make a big game of it and to show that he was so superior intellectually than his counterparts, the people who were trying to catch him. He sent cryptograms. He sent these hidden messages that he demanded be published on the front page of newspapers. And he just took the Bay Area of San Francisco hostage for many years. And most criminals, they just want to get away with their crime and live to commit another crime. And the Zodiac seemed to want to make it as much of a challenge as possible. And that's really what set him apart and still does to this day.
And one of the most disturbing actions that he ever took was at about a year after the first murder, or sometime at that period, he writes a letter to the celebrated defense attorney Melvin Belli. And as you recount in a previous interview, years later, one of the researchers, like yourself, was able to discover that when he put the address of Melvin Belli's house on the envelope, he mimicked the sort of calligraphy in the way the number appeared on the door, demonstrating, although Melvin Belli apparently didn't notice it, that he had been to the house before he wrote the letter.
Yeah, he mimicked the font, if you will, of the house numbers on Melvin Belli's house, which had to be very unnerving if Belli had noticed, and I don't have any proof that he did, but can you imagine if the Zodiac killer wrote you a personal letter, and just to show that he was right outside your door at one point, he mimicked the house numbers, the style of your house numbers on the envelope. That's just terrifying.
One time in my life, before I had an unlisted number, there was a woman who said that she was following me, and she called my house. And maybe the first, second time, I was just taking information because I wanted to alert the police. But the third time, I asked her, what was I wearing today? And she described what I was wearing meticulously. And I saw the clothes hanging on the door that I had hung up. And I thought I was going to have a heart attack. So I'm glad maybe Melvin Bell, I never heard that story. So over the years, do you think that we are any closer, or have we eliminated suspects in this particular case? The movie that came out in 2007, which you assess as about 35% accurate, is certainly interesting. It certainly recaptures the fear of the way people in the Bay Area were experiencing during that period of time. But it certainly points a finger at a few suspects that seem to have been disproven, wouldn't you say?
Oh yes, in fact, a majority of the suspects were disproven really without much of an investigation because the public was coming forward, and still to this day they come forward and they're basing their evidence against their so-called suspect on information that they gleaned through news media stories, newspaper articles, and usually that stuff is inaccurate. So it doesn't take much to be able to disprove a suspect, and really there are only a handful that I've ever considered to be worthy of taking a look at.
Well, when we come back from a break, we're going to take a look at one who, for some reason, caught my attention on your blog and hearing you interviewed. But before we do that, do you think the police thought that any of the other suspects were involved in any of these murders acting not as a Zodiac killer? Because if he only was credited with 7 murders out of 37, then there were another 30 people who got murdered, and the murders were pretty much unsolved.
Well, the Zodiac got upset at the police one day and decided that he wrote a letter that said, you know, the police are telling lies about me. They're saying that I left evidence when I didn't. So I'm going to punish everybody by no longer announcing who I kill. I'm just going to kill, and you're going to have to figure out who I killed. And so he quit, and he quit taking credit for murders. He quit naming names. And so everyone who got killed in California and abroad, the public automatically assumed that that was the Zodiac.
Right, exactly. Almost like the legend of Jesse James, that, you know, was more popular to have been killed by him than just a regular murder.
Right.
So we'll be back in just a minute to talk to you, Tom, and thanks so much for taking the time out. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about a potential suspect, and we're going to go through his lineage and why he might be the Zodiac killer, if anyone could ever prove it. If you care to join the conversation, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710, as we look into the past and try to solve a cold case right here on WOR News Talk Radio 710. Tom Voigt is our guest. He is the author of the blog ZodiacKiller.com. They actually made a documentary some years ago, Hunting the Zodiac, and he's featured in that documentary, along with others who feel that that they're on the track of who the suspect might be. Well, in the Zodiac movie, they go through some of the suspects, and probably the most popular and well-known of them was Arthur Lee Allen, but there was no real evidence ever found connecting him to the killings. He had fingerprints, handwriting cycle samples, and DNA. It never matched up to anything. And Rick Marshall, another suspect who was thought sometimes to have known Arthur Lee Allen, that was maybe he knew him, but it's pretty much been disproven. The movie portrays a character named Bob Vaughn. It was a very suspicious character in the movie. I remember that as part of the movie. And he was older and probably couldn't have performed the acts that the Zodiac Killer did, and he's been pretty much disqualified. But then we come to a suspect or someone who would be of interest by the name of Dick Gajkowski. Tom, tell us about him.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy. Dick Gajkowski was, he's from South Dakota originally. He died in 2004. He came from a homestead, born in Watertown, South Dakota, and then brought up in Webster, went to a Webster High School, and went to Northern States Teachers College in Aberdeen. He became a medic in the Army and had an interest in politics. He was good at just about everything he chose to do, and it's what makes him so interesting is he would jump into a particular interest
and then disappear.
He would throw himself into whatever he was interested in. He would live it. He didn't just have hobbies; his life was his hobby, and he would explore it for a few years, and then he'd reinvent himself. So when he was a politician as a young man, he was so good at it that he became the press secretary for Governor Ralph Herseth of South Dakota. And then he was great at it for a few years, and then he would do something or something would happen, and he would change gears. And so
in this case, he printed a press release saying that the governor was dead, right?
Yeah, a very inappropriate thing to do, and he sent it out. It was a press release, yeah, that the governor had died, and it wasn't true. And it apparently got traced back to Dick Gajkowski, and he pretty much had his political career go down the toilet. So he reinvented himself as a mainstream journalist.
By the way, Tom, my press secretaries wrote that about me, but they were telling the truth.
Well, hopefully they don't turn out like Gajkowski did.
No. So then he goes to California, and tell us about that.
Yeah, he went to California, took a job with the Martinez Morning News Gazette. Martinez is a smaller town near San Francisco. He was there for 2-3 years, and as a reporter, he used to throw himself into his stories. He was he got himself arrested on purpose so that he could do a story about jail conditions. And he worked as a migrant worker for a few weeks so he could do a good story about migrant work. So he was just, he absolutely threw himself in. He lived whatever role he was playing in life. And he ended up in Albany, New York, a place you're very familiar with. He worked at the Knickerbocker News newspaper, which is now defunct. And he was in Albany as a reporter from January 1966 through September 1968. And that's where he lived and worked, was in Albany.
Wow. And Dick, and I'm sorry, Tom, my father was state senator going to Albany during that entire period of time.
That's a very small world. And Gajkowski specialized in stories about politics and also about racial issues. So it's, maybe they had some contact. There was an organization in Albany called the Brothers, and it was a group of black individuals who were very socially, trying to make some changes socially. And Gajkowski was the first white person ever allowed into that group. Because he was so active in whatever he did, whatever he believed in, whatever he was, you know, his hobbies, he would just throw himself in. And he was very against racism and other issues like that. And he ended up, after Albany, in San Francisco, which the Bay Area was the hub for people that were socially, conscious about racism, about sexism, students' rights, and all that stuff. And he ended up working at a counterculture newspaper after dropping out and leaving Albany. He basically turned into a 33-year-old hippie and joined a commune that was against police, and they wanted to overthrow society, and they wanted to make all these changes to society. And I think maybe as the Zodiac, Gajkowski was just basically trying to do what these newspapers talked about, and that was bring the war home, bring the Vietnam War home. Let's create atrocities here in the States so that the middle class, the ruling class, the people that vote in the power, can't ignore Vietnam anymore.
And certainly, whoever the Zodiac was a person that had extreme anger toward the police and really knew how to manipulate the media.
And that's Gajkowski's training. With as press secretary for Governor Herseth, he certainly had a way with the media, and he knew how to do things with the media and get them to jump through hoops. And as a reporter, professional writer, of course, and that was Zodiac's instrument of communication, was through the pen. And Gajkowski had that nailed too. So he was really the perfect candidate. If you were taking applications to hire the Zodiac killer, Gajkowski probably would have been the guy you'd call back first.
So now, in this counterculture and basically this sort of anarchist organization that existed, he's there. But what's interesting is what he does when he leaves there. Apparently, everything he did, he was a genius.
As a 50-year-old man in 1986, Gajkowski invented Newsbase, which was a very primitive internet message board, basically. He was 50 years old. Now, most people 50 years old have trouble learning anything new. And even today, as user-friendly as the internet is, if you put a 50-year-old on the internet, they're going to have a lot of trouble. Gajkowski was 50 years old in 1986 when everything on the internet was so primitive. I wasn't even on the internet until 1995. And he was out there inventing these news groups for people to communicate. He felt it very important that people be able to communicate with the largest audience possible. And I think it's interesting, with that mentality, the Zodiac would write letters, and he would demand that his letters be published on the front page for all to read. Otherwise, he's going to go commit more murders. So they both seem to have this placed a great deal of importance on as many people as possible hearing their word or reading their rant.
All right, stay right there. Tom Voigt, who is runs the ZodiacKiller.com. When we come back, we're going to go back to Dick Gajkowski and see where we can connect him, possibly, with the crimes. And for a look at the news at WOR and NBC, we'll be covering at 6 o'clock. Let's go to Dave Spencer.
And, Governor, the reports that the Pedro Espada jury has been deadlocked on the corruption charges facing him with his health care center. We'll have that developing story. We'll also hear from the police officer who was stabbed in the head in that encounter with an emotionally disturbed man. He is out of the hospital talking. He still has some recovery to do, but you'll hear his comments. And it's the whole talk of North Jersey, the mom who likes to be tan but claims claims she didn't burn her young daughter in the tanning booth. The young daughter didn't go in there, she says, and everybody's talking about that. I'll have more on that coming up at 6.
Okay, thanks very much for that, and very good news about the police officer. That incident occurring about 2 weeks ago with the person that was not on medication at the time. Let's go back to Tom Voigt, who is a blogger and is the author of the blog, ZodiacKiller.com. And Tom, how do we first connect Dick Gajkowski with the possible Zodiac killings?
Well, in 1986, one of his commune members, one of the people who knew him when he was involved in the commune, called the Good Times Commune. That was also the name of the newspaper, the counterculture newspaper in San Francisco, 1969, 1970, 1971. And they all lived together, and they all produced this kind of anti-police counterculture weekly newspaper called the Good Times in San Francisco. And Blaine was someone who knew Gajkowski and was associated with the Good Times. And Blaine, over the years, after they stopped being friends and kind of lost touch with each other, Blaine became really suspicious. Some of the things he remembered Gajkowski saying and doing. And then as Blaine learned more about the Zodiac case, because it really wasn't of interest to the counterculture as it was going on, as Blaine learned more about the Zodiac case, he started to put two and two together, and he really became suspicious that Dick Gajkowski, his former friend and co-worker at the Good Times newspaper in San Francisco, was actually the Zodiac. So he started his own investigation, and Blaine found some really interesting materials, and he's been trying to convince the police and get them to listen ever since. But, you know, he looks like you would expect a 75-year-old former hippie from San Francisco, and they just don't get taken seriously that often.
Now, Nancy Slover, who was a police dispatcher who took a call from the Zodiac Killer in 1969 after he had shot two people, got to hear this tape, and Nancy Slover has spoken at some of these events where people who are trying to figure this crime out and died very recently. But apparently she became emotionally disturbed hearing his voice among the other voices that were played for her as possible suspects.
Yes, Nancy Slover answered the phone one night in 1969 as a police dispatcher, and it was the Zodiac Killer on the other end. He had just shot people, and he was reporting his crime to the police, as any good citizen would do, right?
You know, right.
You call the police to help him out. So Nancy, that call obviously made a huge impression on her, and I found Nancy after a long time looking for her. She changed her name. Her name was different. She'd been married and so forth. And when I found her, I would occasionally play the voices of the various suspects that I collected over the years, and she never had any reaction to any of them. They just didn't sound like the person that she talked to. And Blaine, luckily, in 1986, made several recordings of Richard Gajkowski's voice. And so one night I played Nancy a recording of Gajkowski's voice, and she had a physical reaction. She absolutely... it was as if she was reliving that night all over again, and she had to go back into therapy after listening to that. It changed her life, and I think it probably shortened it a little bit too. And I feel guilty about that because it was something that I felt like needed to be done, and she also felt like it needed to be done. But the reaction she had when she heard Gajkowski's voice was physical, and I'll never forget it. I thought she was gonna just keel over right there.
Yeah, well, that's shocking, but there's more. We'll come back, and if you'd like to ask questions of Tom Voigt, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710, back after this. We're trying to identify the Zodiac Killer on the David Patterson Show with Tom Voigt, a blogger who is an expert on these crimes. The Zodiac Killer authored four ciphers, codes, that he sent and allowed them to be viewed publicly. One of them, the very first one, was solved by a couple by the name of Donald and Betty Hardin. And this seemed to infuriate the Zodiac, who then offered three more ciphers that were never solved. But in one of the ciphers, the letters G-E-I-K, like Geik, which was Dick Gajkowski's nickname, appears. Tell us more about that, Tom.
Yes, Governor. In fact, it's very interesting about the ciphers. It's all about confusion, and it's all about hidden messages. And a cipher is simply a hidden message, and the only person who understands the message is the person that that makes the cipher. You have to solve it in order to figure out what these symbols mean. So the Zodiac simply wrote the alphabet A through Z down on a piece of paper, and then he chose a unique symbol to represent each letter of the alphabet. And so when it was time to prepare his message, he didn't write using letters of the alphabet. He wrote using the symbols that he assigned to them. And that's called creating the key, a cipher key. So when the cipher arrived, it was just a whole bunch of rectangular gibberish, it looked like, just all these symbols. And it was split into thirds, and three different newspapers got one-third of the cipher. And it was eventually solved. And you're right, it did say G-Y-K-E. And in the cipher before it was solved, it said G-Y-K-E in a portion of it, and that pronounced Geik. And he did write under the name Dick Geik when he was in San Francisco during the Zodiac crimes. He went by the name Dick Geik. So in Geik, it was actually solved by Donald and Betty, and that's when we learned that Geik became Aus, the last four letters of the word because. Geik became Aus. But again, you have to figure out the key in order to solve a cipher, and the Hardens figured out Zodiac's key. Geik became Aus with the key. That gives you all three syllables of Gaikowski's last name. It's really brilliant. And there's a coding change. The way Zodiac created the cipher changed right before you get to the Geik portion of the code. He changed how he was doing it, and that's the only thing that allowed this to happen. Now, was it intentional or was it an accident? We'll have to wait and find out if we ever catch the Zodiac.
Well, it's quite a coincidence for all those letters to appear in that order.
It's a tremendous coincidence that you have somebody in San Francisco going by the name Geik, who's a writer for a newspaper, and another newspaper gets a cipher that says Geik in it, and then with the key it solves to Aus. So you have all three syllables of his last name. That's just insane.
We've got a call for you, Tom. We're going to go to Henry, who's calling from Queens. Henry, good afternoon. You're on the David Patterson Show.
Good afternoon. I'm just curious, if those murders had occurred in the New York City area, do you think the New York City police, taking nothing away from the San Francisco Police Department, do you think the murderer would have been caught by the New York City Police Department?
Not if it occurred back in the 60s. It's very difficult when a crime is random, you know, a random act of murder. You're starting from scratch. You don't have witnesses. There's no motive. There's nothing to connect the killer to the victim. So it becomes just a matter of luck. And these days, with so much surveillance equipment, and everyone has a cell phone, they can take pictures, and you can send a text if you witness a crime, and you can get a hold of the police instantly. And it was just so much more basic back in the late 60s. I think Zodiac probably would have been successful in New York or any place else.
So, Tom, thank you for the call, Henry. My question now is, it would seem that since this person was known, he was a reporter and he was one of the pioneers of the Internet, that he must have had handwriting samples, because it's pretty much identified what the handwriting of the Zodiac Killer was. Obviously, he must have had fingerprints and DNA as well. Has anyone tried to match this up with whatever information is available about the Zodiac Killer?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I took part in a television documentary a few years ago on the History Channel. It was called Mystery Quest, and they did a special one-hour episode on television about Gaikowski, and they were able to obtain some of letters that he had written a friend back in the 60s, and they were able to get the envelopes and have them tested for DNA, and they feel like that they were able to obtain Gaikowski's DNA profile. And the producers of the show sent it to the San Francisco Police Department and other law enforcement agencies, hoping that it would be just a simple matter of let's compare it to the Zodiac's DNA and see if it's a match. And nothing's ever been done. And it's very frustrating. Most of the law enforcement agencies...
Now, the San Francisco Police Department has closed the investigation, but is it? But there's one police department that's still researching this case, right?
The Napa, in Napa, Napa County, in the city of Napa, in California, one of Zodiac's crimes occurred there in their jurisdiction, and luckily, they're one of the few police departments in California that isn't completely broke. and they can actually devote resources to cold cases. And that's just something that other agencies don't have the luxury of being able to do, even though they'd like to. So there is some DNA testing going on in terms of evidence that that was left behind, or evidence that the Zodiac might have handled and left at the crime scene. And they're hoping within 30 days to get some a return on that. Ideally, they'll get a profile that doesn't match either the victims, and then you potentially have the Zodiac's DNA, and then it's a matter of comparing it to suspects. And that's my goal, is to have, you know, Gajkowski's DNA compared to DNA that we're sure is from the Zodiac, and then it's either going to be a match or in case closed, or it's not going to be a match. But I think if that's ever done, I think we're going to see a match. I think there's too many points of interest and too many coincidences. That when you have too many coincidences, then you have to think, well, maybe they're not coincidences.
Exactly. So we're going to come back and talk about perhaps a couple of coincidences we left out. We're talking with Tom Voigt. His blog, ZodiacKiller.com, may be closing in on who the Zodiac Killer really was. And we'll finish up with Tom right after this. We're talking with Tom Voigt, and he runs the blog ZodiacKiller.com. And we're talking about a particular person of interest, Dick Gajkowski. With the affiliation with all these subversive organizations, Tom, I'm surprised that they wouldn't have had more of an interest in Gajkowski. He's not exactly a friend of the police when he was in San Francisco.
No, but, you know, the city of San Francisco and nearby Berkeley, California, everybody was against the police in the late 60s. There was a riot every night. There was a firebombing. The students were in the streets. There were demonstrations. And so there were many counterculture newspapers in the Bay Area during that period of time. The Good Times was probably one of the top two or three in terms of circulation. And what's interesting about that is Gajkowski had some, you know, quite a bit of mainstream experience, and he called himself the editor, even though they didn't really have titles. It was kind of a hippie mentality. But on July 31st, 1969, on the very day that Zodiac sent his first three letters, each one containing one-third of a cipher, the Good Times on that very day went with a three-part cover. The cover was split into three parts, just like Zodiac's cipher was split into three parts.
Wow.
Not the same day. Yeah.
Any other disturbing coincidences that stand out to you about Dick Gajkowski?
Well, the Good Times would publish works of fiction that were very eerily real. There was one that described the events of July 4th, 1969 in advance. There was a story written by someone that went by the last name of Heller, and this individual wrote about how in the future, on July 4th, 1969, there'd be attacks against the police in the suburbs, and there'd be bombs, and there'd be murder. And July 4th, as it turns out, was when Zodiac committed his first murder. As the Zodiac, and after that murder is when he called Nancy Slover.
Right, and then writes his first letter on July 8th.
July 31st. He waited a full month. I'm not sure why he waited so long, but after that, the letters pretty much came in quick succession. But like Gajkowski's habit of only sticking to something for 2 or 3 years, the Zodiac was really only around for 2 or 3 years. So we're still talking about him 40 years later. But as the Zodiac, it went from December 20th, 1968 until March 13th, 1971.
So fewer murders than people imagine, and far more publicity than could be generated by most psychopathic killers.
Well, he was good at it. He was good at getting his message heard. He didn't just write to the newspapers. He wrote to them and demanded that those be published on the front page. And it's interesting, he also used newspaper guy lingo. He would refer to being buried on the back pages. The Zodiac did, which
in,
is something
in the actual letters. But no one ever questioned him about the actual situation, even though a friend of his, Blaine, tried to alert the police that he was a suspect.
Well, it wasn't until 1986. There was a book about the Zodiac case that came out and brought it back into the public consciousness, and that's when Blaine started thinking about Gajkowski in terms of the Zodiac murders and started to put 2 plus 2 together. Unfortunately, that was also right about the time when everybody was coming forward with information about their own personal suspect. It was just timing that was not on Blaine's side, and when the police did look at Gajkowski's handwriting, and he usually typed his, as an ex-reporter, he usually actually typed instead of actually, you know, printed. And when they finally saw some of Gatkowski's printing, the state handwriting expert could not rule him out as being the Zodiac killer. They requested more handwriting samples, and Blaine couldn't find any more. There weren't that many to choose from. But I find it amazing that they couldn't rule him out based on handwriting.
That's very interesting. Well, the whole thing is very interesting. And so you're looking forward to the DNA testing, which hopefully we might hear about that in a matter of weeks.
I'm looking forward to that, and I'm also hoping that people in Albany who were around in 66 and 67 and 68 who might remember Dick Gajkowski will contact me through ZodiacKiller.com.
Well, I got to tell you, I was in the Capitol a number of times when my father was in the state Senate during that period of time, and I remember reporters from that era. Dick Zander was one from Newsday who was around at that particular time. I mean, and some people who you can still talk to now, so maybe I'll talk to you about this off the air.
That would be wonderful if you could do that. And if anyone wants to hear Gajkowski's voice, I have a really comprehensive chat room set up at ZodiacKiller.com. And in the chat room, we have audio files that are loaded, and people can hear the actual audio that Nancy Slover heard that caused such a reaction out of her.
And the other thing is that organization, the African Americans who were kind of trying to get into the mainstream business and civic type situations, and many of them angry about discrimination. I think I know some people that were in that organization too.
Well, that would be fantastic. I'd love to talk to you off the air about it.
This has been a podcast from WOR.